The following program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to Community News, covering the towns of Fitchburg, Leominster, Lancaster, Lunenburg, Townsend, Ashby, Ashburnham, Devens, Westminster, Shirley, and Groton. This program is made possible in part by a grant from the Community Foundation of North Central Massachusetts and the Lions Clubs of Fitchburg and Lunenburg. And thanks to the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind for their ongoing support. During the next hour, we'll be reading from the Sentinel and Enterprise newspaper. This is Priscilla Lanigan, along with Stacey Lanier, reading to you live from the Patricia A. Fletcher Studio at Audio Journal in Worcester, Massachusetts. Okay, first up today from Fitchburg, United Way gets $15,000 to improve food aid system. Worcester County Food Bank makes donation. The United Way of North Central Massachusetts has received a $15,000 grant from the Worcester County Food Bank to support Phase 2 of its Regional Food Transportation System initiative. This funding will expand a collaborative distribution model designed to improve the reliability of food delivery to local pantries across North Central Massachusetts. United Way representatives said that, building on the success of Phase 1, the next phase will enhance coordination among partner agencies, reduce logistical barriers, and ensure food reaches communities in need more quickly and consistently. As part of this work, Phase 2 will incorporate a stronger focus on data-driven evaluation to determine which of the three transportation systems is most effective. The models being assessed include direct delivery by the Worcester County Food Bank, delivery through a third-party provider, and the development of a regional sub-hub within North Central Massachusetts, ensuring resources are directed toward the highest impact approach. The partnership and support from Worcester County Food Bank is instrumental in helping us build a more responsive and sustainable food distribution network, said Judy Tomlinson, Director of Community Impact at UWNCM. Working closely with Worcester County Food Bank, we have an opportunity to deepen our focus on North Central Massachusetts. This investment allows us to expand our impact and better support food pantries that are working every day to meet rising demand. We are proud to partner with the United Way of North Central Massachusetts to strengthen food access across the region, said Sienna Weaver, CEO of the Worcester County Food Bank. This investment in Phase 2 of the Regional Food Transportation System will increase collaboration and creative problem-solving, helping to ensure that local pantries receive the food they need more efficiently, ultimately supporting individuals and families facing food insecurity. The Regional Food Transportation System addresses key challenges faced by local pantries, including limited storage capacity, transportation constraints, and uneven access to resources. By streamlining delivery routes and strengthening collaboration, the initiative maximizes available food supplies while reducing waste and operational strain. This initiative is part of UWNCM's broader commitment to ensuring that all residents in North Central Massachusetts have access to nutritious food and essential resources. Okay. And from Fitchburg, FSU bestows Graduate Student Leadership Award. Jessara Dos Santos Dios will address the class on May 16th. From Fitchburg. Jessara Dos Santos Dios of Boston, completing her Master of Education degree in Educational Leadership at Fitchburg State University, will receive the Graduate Student Leadership Award at the university's graduate commencement ceremony on Saturday, May 16th. Dios's recognition includes the opportunity to address the graduates and guests at the ceremony, which will take place at 8 a.m. on Saturday, May 16th, on the university's main quadrangle. Fitchburg State's undergraduate commencement ceremony will follow at 2 p.m., where Massachusetts Lieutenant Governor Kim Driscoll will give the keynote address. Fitchburg State celebrates its 130th commencement exercises this year. Dios has worked as STEM Education Senior Coordinator at Vertex Pharmaceuticals in Boston since 2022, working with high school students to inspire their interest in STEM fields and to learn more about biotech. We are honored to recognize Jessara for her remarkable record of academic excellence, community service, and mentorship, Fitchburg State University President Donna Hodge said. Her work has inspired the next generation of biotech professionals, while her bilingualism has allowed her to advocate for and empower students facing language barriers. Her dedication to fostering an inclusive, supportive environment for her fellow students demonstrates a holistic commitment to leadership that extends far beyond her own academic success, effectively preparing future leaders and strengthening her community. We are thrilled to welcome her to address our graduates and guests next month. Okay. And this from Leominster, Salvation Army answers community's call. Longtime Salvation Army Fitchburg Corps Envoy Lynette Valentine Warren was beaming with pride while recognizing many members of the local community at a recent appreciation dinner. The mood was jovial and celebratory as at the April 16th affair held at the Leominster Elks Lodge that has become an annual tradition, a way to pay tribute to all the Salvation Army volunteers, donors, and community partners, people out doing good time and time again. All of you are those shining stars, Valentine Warren said to the crowd of people gathered who each went home with a gold star pin that were on the tables. The Salvation Army needs more people like you. There was an area set up like a Salvation Army Emergency Disaster Services canteen, and even the meal served was the same food volunteers prepare for public safety personnel who step up to help when there's a fire or hurricane or such, as well as the people affected. Several members of the Emergency Disaster Services team were on hand to collect awards from Valentine Warren, just one of the many groups, organizations, and individuals who received one that evening. She relayed that it is getting harder and harder to meet the needs of everyone who reaches out to the Salvation Army for assistance, whether it's at Christmas time with toys for children and such, or year-round with rent, food, and other necessities. They are humbling themselves to come to us, Valentine Warren said. She also disclosed that they did not meet their fundraising goal this past holiday season for the first time since she came on as the Salvation Army Fitchburg Corps Envoy 11 years ago, which is headquartered on Water Street in Fitchburg and is a branch of the International Charitable Nonprofit. This is how you can help, one donation at a time, she said. She talked about the bell ringers who are faithfully out in the cold in their coverage areas, Fitchburg, Leominster, and Lunenburg, collecting money during the yearly Red Kettle Holidays campaign, some who have been doing it for many years. And Valentine Warren also gave a shout-out to all the businesses that generously donate food and supplies, the organizations and groups that hold food and toy drives, and so much more done by local people that enables them to lift up those in the community who need it the most. She spoke about bell ringers representing Leominster Credit Union, local Rotary Clubs, Leominster Community Branch YMCA, and students in the Monte Tech Marine Corps JROTC program, who are out at the Market Basket in Leominster and Athol every weekend during the Red Kettle season. She called out members of the Fitchburg Fire Department, Ayer Police Department, FMC Devon's staff, EDS team members, and Community Foundation on North Central Massachusetts, Making Opportunity Count, North Central Massachusetts Chamber of Commerce, and others for their dedication and unwavering support. I am grateful for everyone, Valentine Warren said, while handing out numerous awards to dozens of people, all part of the dedicated crew who ensure the Salvation Army is there in times of crisis 365 days a year. We are always looking for more members, Valentine Warren said. Working together is success. She also announced that they are well on their way to building a brand new Salvation Army Fitchburg Corps headquarters to replace the aging one on Water Street. Valentine Warren said they were around $447,000 shy of raising the needed $2 million toward the $5 million needed, with the Salvation Army National Organization contributing the remaining $3 million. I'm very proud to say we are very close, and it is my dream that when we do our opening, that guys would be present. Valentine Warren emphasized that it's important to remember that while the Salvation Army is most visible during the holidays, the Salvation Army Red Shield is present in the community 365 days a year. So many people do not know it's not just a red kettle and a thrift store. It's so much more, she said, following the event. We do our annual volunteer dinner to extend our appreciation to all the volunteers who help throughout the year to make a difference in our community, and it's our way of saying thanks for giving. Okay. And let's see. From Fitchburg State University, University rededicates children's literature collection. gathering re-honors Professor Emerita Lillian A. Tater 50 years later. History came full circle on Thursday in the Amelia V. Gallucci Serio Library at the Fitchburg State Community, gathered to rededicate the children's literature collection to Professor Emerita Lillian A. Tater. The ceremony, held on April 30th, took place exactly 50 years to the day after the original 1976 dedication, marking a poignant milestone in the university's English studies heritage. The event served as a formal restoration of Professor Tater's visible legacy on campus, following a 2014 library renovation during which the original commemorative plaque was lost. The university unveiled a new memorial plaque to ensure Tater's contributions remain a permanent fixture of the institution. Ron Colbert, 76 and 80, a member of the Fitchburg State Alumni Association Board of Directors, said he attended the original dedication for Tater as an undergraduate student and was selected to give Tater red roses as they unveiled the library plaque dedicated in her honor. As an elementary education major, Colbert learned the art of teaching from Tater. Today we are here to honor and re-honor Ms. Lillian Tater, a professor and university colleague from our past, said Colbert. A daughter of a hard-working family in Fitchburg and a woman who impacted the lives of countless teachers, children, with her faith, love of literature, storytelling, and writing. Ms. Tater fostered strong, empathic relationships with her students while setting high academic and classroom management expectations. She created a culture of respect in her classroom by defining what respect looks like and then demonstrating respect goes both ways. She adapted to different learning needs, was a master of patience, used clear communication, modeled good organization, and actively engaged us in class. Fitchburg State Associate Librarian, Head of Instruction and Information Literacy, Renee Fratantonio, acted as the chief architect of the Tater Restoration, spearheading the archival research and collection efforts that returned a lost chapter of the university's history to its rightful place within the library. I had a lot of fun, and it was a joy to learn more about her, said Fratantonio. Professor Tater's history is inextricably linked with the evolution of Fitchburg State. A daughter of Jewish immigrants who arrived in New York in 1895 and later to Fitchburg, she was a first-generation college student and a member of the university's historic first-degree-granting class in 1933. Her career before she joined the English department in 1950. Oh, wait a minute. Her career at the institution spanned over three decades, beginning in 1943 at the Edgerly Model School before she joined the English department in 1950. After over 30 years of service, Professor Tater retired from Fitchburg State in 1970. Professor Tater's legacy is a testament to the enduring power of education and the deep roots of our Falcon family, said Fitchburg State President Donna Hodge. Today's rededication is not just about restoring a plaque. It is about reaffirming that her influence lives on in every classroom, shaped by her students and in every child whose imagination was opened through the literature she championed. The original 1976 honor was a grassroots effort led by former students who sought to immortalize Tater's passion for children's literature. The newly unveiled plaque mirrors the original archival sentiments. Dedicated in honor of Lillian A. Tater, April 30, 1976, remembered for her love of children's literature, dedication to her students, and countless contributions to the college community. The university is hosting a commemorative exhibit in the library's entrance display case. The exhibit features archival records and photographs detailing Professor Tater's journey from a 1930s normal school student to a pillar of the English department. The Fitchburg State community is encouraged to visit the library to view the collection and then learn more about the woman who helped build the foundation of the university's literary tradition. Very good. Well, we're coming up on 4:15, probably a good time to take a break, and Stacy will have more after this.
Audio Journal, the radio reading service of Central Massachusetts, is your best source for news, information, and entertainment for individuals who are blind or otherwise unable to access print material. We are a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like to know our broadcast schedule, go to the Audio Journal website at www.audiojournal.org or contact us and we'll gladly send you a large print or braille program guide. Call 508-797-1117 or email info@audiojournal.org. Audio Journal connects listeners to their local communities. Have you heard the news? Make sure everyone knows you heard it on Audio Journal.
Welcome back to Community News for the Fitchburg and Leominster areas on Audio Journal. And it's obituary time, as usual. We'll begin with Deborah Ann Shepherd of Leominster. She passed away peacefully on May 1st. Born on February 19th, 1956, in Fitchburg. She was the firstborn of 10, and she leaves 3 sisters and 5 brothers. Deb graduated from Fitchburg High, class of 74. She attended Monachusett Regional Technical School, graduating from the Medical Assistance Program. Over the past 45 years, Deb dedicated her life to the medical community. Deb found her greatest happiness, in time spent with her family, vacationing on the Cape and enjoying Sunday family dinners. In her youth, she was indispensable, assisting her parents in caring for her many brothers and sisters. Later, Deb looked forward to car rides and farm stand adventures with nieces, nephews, cousins, and godchildren. She had a love of music, playing the piano, church organ, and singing in the church choir or folk group. She was an avid reader, New England sports fan, and a concert enthusiast. She was a gentle woman with a big heart, living quietly a life in service to others. A mass will be held in Our Lady of the Lake Church in Leominster on Saturday, May 9th at 11 a.m. Burial to follow in St. Bernard Cemetery, and there are no calling hours. And if you'd like to make a donation, you may do that to UMass Memorial. Next, from Fitchburg, Irene Duvall McAloney Carrier, 82, of Fitchburg, passed away on January 1st of this year. She lived in Fitchburg all of her life. She's survived by her husband, Robert Carrier, and 2 sons, William E. McAloney and R. Thomas McAloney. A funeral mass will be held on May 7th at 10 in St. Joseph's Church in Fitchburg, and there'll be a reception following. There are no calling hours. And moving along, Wayne Gates of Fitchburg passed away on April 30th. He was born June 6, 1940, and graduated from Fitchburg High School, class of 58. During high school, he worked at Dempsey Drugstore. In 59, he joined the Marine Corps and was stationed in Albany, Georgia, and Iwakuni, Japan. After he finished his 4-year enlistment, he returned to Fitchburg, where he worked at Fitchburg Paper Company, David Holmes Construction, and Honkala Construction. Later, he was a self-employed property manager. He's survived by his wife of 61 years, Nancy Gates, 2 daughters, Christina Gates and Angela Gates Godin, 2 grandchildren, and a great-granddaughter. We would like to thank the staff at both the Highlands and the Holden Rehabilitation Center. His services were held yesterday. And yet another from Fitchburg, Dorina Mailet, 93, a longtime Fitchburg resident, passed away on November 27th. Dorina was born in Bay St. on New Brunswick, Canada, on April 6, 1932, and moved to the U.S. when she married her husband 72 years ago. Her husband of 62 years, Rene E. Mellette, passed away in 2015. She leaves her children, Darlene Duvall, Kenneth Mellette, Brenda DeCarolis, Alan Mellette, Sherry Quinty, and Gerald Mellette. She also leaves 8 grandchildren, 18 great-grandchildren, and 1 great-great-grandchild. Let's see. Her funeral mass will be on Friday at 11 at Our Lady of the Lake Church in Leominster, followed by burial in the Veterans Memorial Cemetery in Winchendon. And this one is from Lester. Byron Z. Shepherd, 94, died April 26th at the Meadows in Leicester, Mass. He's survived by 3 sons, Mark of Viola, Wisconsin, Gary of Lancaster, Mass., and Raymond of Anchorage, Alaska. He's also survived by 2 grandsons and 1 great-grandson. His wife of 51 years, Agnes, died in 2013. Born in August 10th, 1931, in Springfield, Maine, he grew up in Springfield. But during World War II, the family moved to Leominster. He graduated from Leominster High in 49. In the Korean War, Byron served in the Army Security Agency stationed in the Philippines. He lived most of his life in Lancaster, Massachusetts, and worked for several companies as a tool maker and model maker. Byron retired to Viola, Wisconsin, where he enjoyed gardening and wood carving. An avid lover of nature and the outdoors, Byron traveled to Alaska 25 summers in a row. Wow. If he didn't have a woodworking tool in his hands, it was because he was reading a book. He was a voracious reader and always ready to engage in conversations about philosophy and life. Burial will be at the convenience of the family. All right, that's it for the obituaries this year. So this week, sorry, not this year. There'll probably be a few more. Let's turn to some actual news. This article's entitled Art Abounds with Spring Flowers Around the Region. And I'm going to read the portion of the article that's relevant to this area. When May arrives, it's finally spring. And with the winter we've endured, we need warm days and flowering bushes and shrubs more than ever. And there are art and arts-oriented activities to keep everyone occupied and excited. Residents and visitors are invited to explore Fitchburg during the 2026 Hidden Treasures Festival of Nature, Culture, and History, a month-long collaborative celebration presented by Freedom's Way National Heritage Area. As a part of the festival, multiple Fitchburg organizations will host free public events and activities during May that showcase a, quote, hidden treasure in the community, highlighting stories, places, landscapes, and creative traditions that help define Fitchburg's sense of place. Featured events include Henry David Thoreau reading Civil Disobedience at the Fitchburg Public Library on Monday, May 4th. Haven't seen him around lately, but he'll be at the library on Monday. On Sunday, May 17th, Gathering Hearts, a community vigil of culture, resilience, and solidarity, organized by Friends of Fitchburg Abolitionist Park, will be held. And on Saturday, May 30th, there's a drumming workshop with Crocodile River Music at the Fitchburg Art Museum. These events offer a wonderful opportunity for people to connect with the places and stories that make Fitchburg special, said Patrice Todisco, Freedom's Way Executive Director. Hidden Treasures invites the public to see the community in a new way. Sponsored in part by Rockland Trust Bank, Hidden Treasure events and activities are free and open to the public and are part of the larger festival, featuring 101-plus activities by nearly 100 partners in Massachusetts and southern New Hampshire. The 2026 festival also aligns with ongoing Revolution 250 commemorations, highlighting the region's central role in the founding of the nation, while connecting those stories to the landscapes and communities that still shape daily life today. Sounds like some good opportunities. Okay, here's a commentary piece from the sports section. Onward and upward at Fitchburg State. Growth in area of life is an important thing. That certainly rings true in college life. Students grow, bond with others, and learn, both academically and about themselves. It's all about improvement and adaptation. Collegiate institutions are the same way. Stagnation is the enemy. So, kudos to Fitchburg State University, President Donna Hodge, Executive Director of Athletics and Recreation, Matthew Burke, and everyone else involved in the university's athletic department for their recent additions to the school's varsity sports offerings. Adapt and grow. Stay still and fall behind. The addition of women's hockey and men's lacrosse at the varsity level are unequivocally a bold and smart decision for the university. The two aforementioned sports are among the fastest growing in the nation, and rather than see potential student athletes held elsewhere to continue playing after high school, Fitchburg State has widened the playing field, so to speak. A boys lacrosse standout who may have been interested in FSU's strong academic programs in the past could have sought furthering their, education elsewhere in the past in the hopes of playing the collegiate game. The same goes for girls who took to the ice in high school. It's a chance for the school to continue its growth and to offer more to student-athletes looking to succeed in both sports and academics. Adding our 18th and 19th varsity sports is a testament to the momentum we're generating at Fitchburg State, Burke said. We operate with a student-first framework where athletic rigor and academic discipline aren't just goals, they're our standard operating procedure. We're not just adding teams. We're recruiting the next generation of leaders who will define the competitive grit of this university. There are certainly costs involved with adding two varsity sports, but college athletics are often a give-and-take affair. There's a price for building these programs, but in turn, they attract more student athletes and can generate revenue for the university. Bringing students and their families into the city doesn't hurt anyone's bottom lines. Fitchburg State has pushed to improve all aspects of the school over the past decade, enhancing both academic and athletic facilities, as well as integrating a strong union with the city into student life. The addition of women's ice hockey and men's lacrosse isn't just an expansion of our roster, it's a reinforcement of our institutional blueprint, Hodge said. We are building a culture where every student athlete has a seat at the table and the resources to succeed. This is about creating a foundational excellence that transcends the scoreboard, ensuring our students are as sharp in the classroom as they are on the ice and the field. The momentum we are building across this campus is tangible, with these new programs serving as a powerful catalyst for our next chapter. Expanding to 19 varsity sports strengthens the connective tissue of our institution, creating new traditions that bind our students to one another and to the city of Fitchburg. This is how we build a culture of excellence, by continuously expanding the footprint of opportunity for our scholar athletes. Now the search begins for athletes who want to be the building blocks for what will hopefully become successful programs. We're looking for student athletes who aren't just looking for a roster spot, but who want to be the founding architects of something historic, Burke said. At Fitchburg State, we want competitors who are as deeply invested in their degree as they are in the scoreboard. Joining these programs means committing to a culture where academic grit and athletic dominance are interlocked. It's an invitation to build a legacy from the ground up. All right, it's 4:30. It's time for a public service announcement and a little break, and Priscilla will be back in just a moment.
Low vision and blind persons in the Worcester area are fortunate to have a support group sponsored by the Massachusetts Association for the Blind in Worcester. The group meets monthly at the Worcester Senior Center and provides information and resources to assist with daily living, assistive technology, transportation, and friendship. For more information, please call Marion at 508-754-0672. Again, that telephone number is 508-754-0672.
And we're back. You're listening to Community News, Fitchburg Leominster, a production of the Audio Journal. Okay, here's an interesting article on Fitchburg history. It's titled An Extraordinary Act of Historical Stewardship, and it's all about John Fitch. Shows his grave marker. It says he was born in 1708, died 1795, founder of Fitchburg, 1764, founder of Ashby, 1767. Wow. A special event coming up this month pays tribute to a pioneer who settled in the area centuries ago. A ceremony slated for Saturday, May 16th at 11 a.m. at the Old Burial Ground Cemetery at 20 Common Road in Ashby will dedicate a grave marker for John Fitch, the city of Fitchburg's namesake, who was born in Billerica in 1708 and laid to rest in Ashby in 1795. Excuse me. I am in awe and so very grateful to our neighbors at the Ashby Historical Society for making this ode to history happen, Fitchburg Mayor Sam Squilia said in information announcing the event that community members are welcome to attend. She went on to say that Fitch lived a remarkable and difficult life, and his story is closely tied to both Fitchburg and Ashby before sharing his life sketch. Fitch, who is not to be confused with the American inventor by the same name from Connecticut, first settled in what was then Lunenburg in the 1730s, and later, when a new town was created in 1764, his homestead became part of Fitchburg. Just a few years after that, when Ashby was incorporated in 1767, the same homestead became part of Ashby, Squilia said. So, John Fitch was not only the founder of Fitchburg, he was also one of the founders of Ashby. In 1748, Fitch's home was attacked and burned, and he and his family were taken captive to Canada. After a year or so, they were ransomed and made their way back to Massachusetts, but his wife Susanna died on the return voyage. John Fitch rebuilt, remarried, and went on to play an important role in the early development of this region, but by the end of his life, his fortunes had changed, Squilia said, adding that the historic figure died penniless and was buried in the paupers section of the Ashby Cemetery with no marker. That is what makes this so amazing. More than 230 years later, the Ashby Historical Society raised the funds to finally place a gravestone near the spot where he was buried, making sure the man whose name lives on in Fitchburg is no longer left in an unmarked grave, Squilia said. This is an extraordinary act of historical stewardship and of neighborly kindness. The granite marker, grave marker creation, was commissioned to be created by two local small businesses, Leominster Monument Company and Hathaway Memorials in Stirling. Squillia said she is excited for the dedication ceremony and appreciates that she was invited to join. "It means a great deal to me, and it is fitting that the city that carries John Fitch's name can be there alongside Ashby to recognize him," she said. After the dedication ceremony, everyone is invited across the street to Ashby Historical Society at 850 Main Street for our coffee, donuts, and an open house. "Thank you again to the Ashby Historical Society for this thoughtful work," Squillia said. "History lives through efforts like this, and this is a beautiful way to make sure John Fitch's story and the history we share with Ashby is known and remembered with dignity, the dignity it deserves." Very good. Okay, here's Sally Cragen's Pet Talk column. This one's titled, "Kiefer, Everyone's Big Buddy. Bernese Mountain Dogs Are Furry Working Dogs." The question here is, "Dear Pet Talk, from kids, why is Kiefer so big? How come he's so furry? Is he the biggest dog? How come his paws are so big?" Of course. And this is from fourth grade students in Mrs. Thomas's classroom at Crocker Elementary School in Fitchburg. The answer, "Dear students, you definitely met a very special therapy dog at our classroom visits, and thank you for observant questions. Last week, we answered questions about Reggie, therapy cat, and this week, it's his big buddy. We went straight to Kiefer's mom, Cap Corduan, and she reports, Kiefer was bred to be a draft dog. That means he is a working dog that pulls things. Bernese Mountain's Mountain dogs have a very special job because they are big enough to wear a harness and pull carts with supplies to people who live in the top of the Swiss mountains. As for Kiefer's furry coat, Cap tells us, he has what is called a double coat. The soft hair underneath the long hair keeps him warm while working in the snowy mountains. The long hair on top repels the snow so his skin doesn't get wet. Kiefer has a traditional brown, black, and white coat, and yes, his coat is very thick and lustrous. Though it may seem like he's the biggest dog in northern Worcester County, Cap tells us, in fact, his breed is the smallest in the draft dog breed. The St. Bernard, Newfoundland, Leon Berger, and the Great Dane are bigger dogs, just to name a few. As for his paws, which are the size of an adult's hands, the size really is impressive. Cap explains, his paws are so big because they help him climb the mountains. Usually supplies would be taken up the mountains by horses, but when the snow got too deep to support the horses, the Bernese Mountain Dog would come in for the job. Their feet fit neatly into the paths already made by the horses. If you look closely, their forepaws almost look like horse hoofs. I hope that answers the questions for Kiefer's fan club. Kiefer can be visited on the first Saturday of the month at the Fitchburg Public Library in our Read to a Therapy Pet program from 10:30 a.m. to noon. Okay, maybe we should go. And from Shirley, Leominster Musicians Band playing at Bull Run May 8th. Seasoned local musician Mark Marquis is expected to showcase his group's talents during a show at the Bull Run on Friday evening. There are still tickets available for the Mark Marquis Group on May 8th, beginning at 8 p.m. at the renowned music venue located at 215 Great Road. The six-piece band features Leominster-based Marquis on guitar, Jerry Sabatini on trumpet, Paul Rochon on keyboards, Anne-Marie Koivu on piano, Jimmy Morrell on guitar and bass, and Dave Bergeron on drums. The event details states that Marquis is known for putting his own guitar stylings on whatever repertoire he represents, running the gamut from jazz to blues to original compositions. Marquis, a virtuoso guitarist, has been playing professionally from an early age and has performed with some of the finest jazz and blues musicians. As a musician, Marquis knows and can play in the styles of John Coltrane, Thelonious Monk, and Miles Davis, as well as Jimi Hendrix and Wes Montgomery. Growing up, he also studied the classical repertoire of Chopin, Ravel, and Bach on the piano, and this variety of music has made its way into his sound. Marquis has recorded and released a number of original albums over the years and won the 2016 Worcester Music Awards Lifetime Achievement Award. Don't miss out on this night of great music, the event information continued. Mark is looking forward to drawing from his repertoire with some new band members and presenting great music along with great playing. Wow, sounds like fun. And from Fitchburg, this is titled Cultural Resistance, Gathering of Hearts event, May 17th at Abolitionist Park, Youth Organized. City resident Diego Barahona and members of his youth indigenous group are behind a public gathering that will bring residents of the city and surrounding area together for an afternoon of cultural expression, reflection, and solidarity. The 17-year-old Fitchburg High School student, Junior, has put together Gathering of Hearts on Sunday, May 17th from 2 to 5 p.m. at Fitchburg Abolitionist Park, 42 Snow Street, which will feature traditional dance, music, prayer, and spoken reflections led by cultural groups, community organizations, and faith leaders. According to information shared in the event page, it is inspired by traditions of peaceful cultural protest practiced throughout Puerto Rico, the Caribbean, and Central America, and will use song, dance, prayer, and community presence to create space for remembrance, healing, and resilience. The Gathering of Hearts was an initiative that was inspired by the amount of indigenous people I saw holding protests to advocate for their people. I wanted to do something more, not just scream and shout, but actually help reverse what damage our current administration is causing, because I refuse to be a bystander and regret not standing up for what I strongly know is right, Barahona said. I strongly believe in times like these we have to show cultural resistance, as our ancestors have done years ago through folk dances like bomba in Puerto Rico or danza in Mexico. According to event information, participants will gather to honor individuals and families affected by immigration enforcement while celebrating the cultural traditions and strength of the local Latino and immigrant communities. The multicultural gathering will take place at Fitchburg Abolitionist Park, connecting contemporary struggles for dignity and justice with the city's historic role in the movement to end slavery in the United States, and will activate the park as a living public space where history, culture, and civic engagement intersect. To date, $1,200 has been donated by generous people to a GoFundMe set up to defray the cost of the event, and Barahona is grateful for each and every dollar raised. Barahona grew up in Revere and moved to Fitchburg when he was 10. As a Puerto Rican, Salvadorian, Nahua indigenous from El Salvador, and Taino indigenous from Puerto Rico, Barahona said convening Gathering of Hearts is important to him because I can't refuse to stand by and to stand by and watch people actively suffer and have no support, help, and live in constant fear, especially after experiencing members in my family being detained by ICE while they were legally allowed to be here. His indigenous name is Guatuniki, which means soul, fire, or heart of the fire, a name Barahona said he likes to include in his full name because it is a part of my identity as a Taino indigenous person. Barahona is very proud of his rich cultural heritage and ancestry, so much so that he launched a youth indigenous advocacy group, Guarabono Nakan, when he was in eighth grade, and they were putting together the upcoming gathering. My group grew during my high school years, where we started doing presentations and hosting our first event at the Fitchburg Art Museum, he said of the group, whose name means Warriors of Balance in Taino. Now we are doing what the group was started for in the first place, advocate for Latin American indigenous peoples' rights. He is thankful for Mount Wachusett Community College Brewer Center for Civic Learning and Community Engagement Director Paul Thibault Munoz, one of the founders of the Fitchburg Abolitionist Park, who is co-hosting Gathering of Hearts, and Barahona said has been a big help to my group. There are many fellow FHS students in his Guarabono Nakan group, and some who have helped organize the gathering, including Mexican indigenous siblings Renee and Noah Rodriguez and Autumn Leonard, who is Irish. When asked how it feels living in the United States as a minority during these incredibly tumultuous political times, Barahona was brutally honest. It generally scares me sometimes, especially after seeing what has been happening. There are times I worry for my immediate family, he said. As a 17-year-old, I should be worrying about school, not if one day ICE comes to my house and takes me and my little sister. That fear should come to no one, which pushes me harder to stand up and do something about it. When it comes to the reason and purpose behind Gathering of Hearts, the young adult is hopeful that it will have a meaningful impact for attendees. I hope many people carry with them the realization that we are all responsible as a community to help each other, to not stand by and watch those around us suffer and turn a blind eye, because it doesn't affect me, he said. I hope the Gathering of Hearts will bring the community of Fitchburg and neighboring cities and towns together to realize we have to be united, help and support each other in community and diversity, and show cultural resilience and remind this nation we are not going anywhere. Okay, it's now about 4:45. We'll take our last break, and Stacy will be back to finish up the hour.
The Attorney General's Office is an advocate and resource for all residents of Massachusetts. The Attorney General's Office protects consumers, combats fraud and corruption, and investigates crime and prosecutes criminals. Additionally, it protects the environment, workers, and civil rights. For more information, or if you need to file a complaint, call 617-727-2200.
Welcome back to Community News for Fitchburg and Leominster and the areas around them, an audio journal. All right, here's just a fun little article from Ashby. Ashby Chili Cook-Off, and the winners are... Over 4 dozen people attended the Chili Cook-Off recently held at the Senior Center. Everyone who attended the Friends of Ashby Council on Aging event hosted by the seniors did a blind sampling of 7 different varieties of chili that were entered and then voted for the one they liked the best. Hot dogs and corn muffins with chili were also offered, and the winners were awarded gold, silver, and bronze soup ladles. Kevin Meehan came in first, Pastor Kenny Johnson second, and Ken Reynolds third. COA volunteer Susan Clement reported that a chowder fest is being planned for later this year. Well, that sounds like delicious fun. All right, article from Fitchburg. Fitchburg City Council Legislative Affairs Committee passes new ordinance to keep parking garages safe. Police can now issue no trespass orders to keep out loiterers. The Fitchburg City Council Legislative Affairs Committee recently voted unanimously to pass an ordinance that will provide police officers with the tools to properly address a persistent public safety issue in the downtown parking garages. During the committee's April 7th meeting, Police Chief Stephen Giannini said that he's been aware of significant concern regarding safety in the parking garages. One of the biggest complaints I've heard over the course of the year is feeling safe in and around Main Street and in the garages. The garages specifically, said Giannini. Before this ordinance, we really lacked the ability to move people along in the parking garage. Giannini explained how the ordinance will not only address a safety issue, but will protect the livelihood of downtown businesses. If, for example, you were patronizing a downtown business and you went in the parking garage and there was a group of 6 people just sitting in the parking lot doing who knows what, maybe you turn around and you don't spend your money on Main Street, said Giannini. And we didn't have the authority to just simply move them along from being there. Now we do. This ordinance clearly defines parking garages are for parking purposes. And any other reason, we can ask you to move along. If you refuse to move along, you can immediately be issued a no trespass order, and enforcement can be up to and include arrest. At the beginning of the meeting, Councillor Beth Walsh, chair of the Legislative Affairs Committee, gave a basic overview of how the ordinance is structured. Basically, what it does is create definition of what's a parking facility, what the purposes are for parking there, what is a no trespass order, said Walsh. Counselor at Large Kevin Starr said he's personally witnessed the type of activity to which Giannini was referring, which included people using the garages as both a bathroom and a lounge. City Council President Anthony Zarella agreed that it's badly needed and mentioned how he appreciated the careful drafting to stand in contrast to the previously broad statutes for loitering. Ultimately, courts struck those down and saying it gave too much discretion. It gave too little notice to citizens of what they could or could not do on public property. This, by contrast, gives very clear notice to anyone who bothers to look. Zarella said he hopes that it helps instill confidence. The committee voted unanimously to approve the ordinance, which amends Chapter 132 of the Code of the City of Fitchburg. Well, that's interesting. Here is an article from Pepperell. Early morning fire claims a life in Pepperell. An early morning fire at Maple Leaf Village left one resident dead on Saturday, prompting a multi-agency investigation into the cause. On behalf of the Pepperell Fire Department, I want to express our condolences to the family that lost a loved one, Deputy Chief John Rose said. This is a sad day for them and our community. The identity of the deceased person has not been made public. The release states that Pepperell firefighters were called to Harper Way at about 2:50 a.m. after a neighbor dialed 911. Crews arrived to find the mobile home already engulfed in heavy flames. Firefighters forced their way inside but were unable to locate anyone amidst the intense conditions. After knocking down the flames, they discovered the body of the sole occupant, described as an older adult. The Office of the Chief Medical Examiner will determine the cause and manner of death. A dog inside the home also died. Investigators from the Pepperell Fire and Police Departments, State Police, are working to determine where and how the fire started. They're being assisted by the Department of Fire Services Code Compliance and Enforcement Unit. All right. Well, let's see. Well, I'm going to read yet another article about Market Basket. This is a weekly tradition, I think. It's entitled Market Basket Leadership in Transition. Days after a judge ruled in their favor, the Market Basket Board of Directors announced that interim CEO Donald Mulligan will retire from the grocery chain after 43 years. He was named to the interim role in September amid a high-profile clash between former president and CEO Arthur T. Demoulas and his three sisters, who all have an ownership stake in their family's company. Alongside news of Mulligan's retirement, the board also announced that longtime employee Chuck Casasa will assume the role of president of the company. Casasa has worked at Market Basket since 1976, a tenure which included three decades as a store manager. Board member Jay Hatchigan said Casasa embodies the very best of Market Basket. Building his career at age 14 as a bagger, he rose through the ranks, front-end manager, merchandiser, assistant manager, until he was promoted to manager in 87. For the next 30 years, he proudly managed many of our busiest stores in New England with skill and trained his colleagues along the way. In 2017, he was again promoted, this time to grocery supervisor, overseeing more than 25 stores, followed by his most recent promotion to director of operations in 2025. Hashigan said that Casasa's leadership and dedication to Market Basket over the past 50 years is highly valued by the board, and we cannot be more proud to have him serve as our president. The latest leadership struggle began nearly a year ago when the board announced that DeMoulas was being suspended from his role, along with several other employees, including DeMoulas' own children. DeMoulas was officially fired in September, but what had largely been a battle of public relations then entered the courts in Delaware, where Market Basket is incorporated. That legal battle resulted in a judge ruling against DeMoulas early this month and calling his firing valid. The situation echoed another leadership struggle in 2014 when DeMoulas was also fired from the role by his cousin's side of the family. In that case, a boycott of the company resulted in DeMoulas getting his job back after he and his sisters brought out their cousin's share of the company for $1.6 billion. Well, let's see. It's almost time to go, but before we go, let's have a couple of notes about today in history. In 1889, on this date, the Eiffel Tower opened to the public as part of the Paris World's Fair. In 1935, on this date, the WPA was established under an order signed by President Franklin D. Roosevelt. And on this date in 2023, King Charles III was crowned at Westminster Abbey. Charles was the 40th sovereign enthroned in the Abbey and at 74, the oldest. Well, that's it for the news this week. This program, this community news program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you'd like a hard copy of our schedule in large print or braille, call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I'm Stacy Lanier. I've been reading today with Priscilla Lanigan. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned for more community news from Sturbridge, Southbridge, and Charlton.
This is Bird Note. There may be no busier bird during the nesting season than a male house wren, because just a day or so after migrating back north from the tropics, he claims a territory and sets to work checking out potential nest cavities. Might be a birdhouse, a hollow pipe, an old nuthatch hole, or one of last year's oriole nests. And in each of these locations, the male house wren builds a starter nest. He'll stack a couple of dozen tiny twigs here, several hundred there, and he'll use whatever else comes to hand, or beak, too, from nails and bits of wire to paper clips and hairpins. Anything twig-like to get the job done. The male house wren stays at it until a female pairs with him. She now picks one of the starter nests and takes over construction, building a sturdy platform of sticks topped by a cup nest lined with grass, hair, feathers, even snake skin. The male's leftover starter nests may discourage other birds from nesting in those cavities. People maintaining bluebird houses have learned to dump out these dummy nests once a female house wren has made her choice. This helps bluebirds find a space to nest, at least until next spring, when that male house wren gets busy again. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. Bird Note is grateful to all listeners that provide financial support for this show. You can join them at birdnote.org.
What's your vision?
My vision is 20/200.
Light perception in the right eye and zero vision in the left eye.
20/200 at best on my left eye, and on my right eye, I cannot.
No, I mean, what's your vision?
My goal is to become a journalist.
To be able to work.
Financial independence.
My vision is employment opportunities for all, including people with disabilities.
My vision is for all of my students to dream big.
That he become fully independent.
For my patients to live their best lives.
What's your vision?
What's your vision?
What is your vision?
At the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind, our vision is clear. We believe that all people who are blind or visually impaired should have the opportunity to work and thrive. To learn how we can help you meet your employment or workforce goals, call 800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/mcb.